Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic level it's supposed to be.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Ethics Experts. I am your host, Giovanni Gallo, and I'm super excited to introduce you and feature today Melanie Sponholt. Before we get into the show, I just want to welcome everybody. Thank you for joining today. And if you are a repeat listener or a subscriber, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're tuning in today. And that's what you get with every episode of the Ethics Experts. If you're a subscriber, you get that extra special welcome at the beginning. So why don't you subscribe on your podcast player and catch every show so you don't miss one. Melanie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, glad you could make it on. So if any of you guys are into trivia, this is our first recording of the new year 2022. So
you're
probably listening to this in February or something. But we are kicking off the year with a super exciting conversation. I've really been looking forward to having Melanie on. Melanie is Chief Compliance Officer for Wad Capital Partners, working specifically across their different portfolio companies to help them implement and run strong compliance programs. So we're going to spend some time talking about the diverse perspective that Melanie has on running compliance at a leadership strategic level, but across several different companies within the private investment or private equity space. But before we do that, this is the Ethics Experts, Melanie. You're an ethics expert officially now, so congratulations. let's talk about you. I want to talk about you before we get into the job and all of that stuff. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to be in the position you are. I feel like everybody has an interesting story about how they became an ethics expert.
I always love these conversations too. I always ask everyone this because it's so much fun, the different answers that you get. I call it the great Plinko board of life. So I don't know if that ages me, but if anyone ever watched The Price is Right and they drop the little chip and it would go, like, you never know right. Where it's going to end up. I feel like we all end up in the compliance slot somehow. So for me, I started, my first career was in publishing. So I was an English major in college and I worked for Random House when I graduated. I actually worked for Fodor's Travel Guides. So cool. I also can tell you about, I did the guide to Hong Kong. I worked on the Caribbean guide, the Florida guide, trying to think Nepal, Tibet, and Bhutan. I did that guide. Oh. So I did some interesting work there.
So did you guys hate Rick Steves? Was he like your archenemy?
No, you know what? We actually played pretty nicely in the sandbox with the other travel guide companies. Because the truth is a lot of them share writers. Like it's very hard to make a living as a travel writer.
Right.
So it's like one big community where everyone kind of works a little bit across the board. So we didn't
makes me happy.
Yeah, we didn't have any arch enemies really.
Okay, good.
So I was volunteering at a hospital in New York City and I just decided that I was really enjoying my volunteer work so much that I wanted to switch fields. I wanted to go into healthcare. I think it was mostly because I really like interacting with people and helping people. And editing can be very isolating because you can spend a lot of time with a manuscript and a computer. And I just really enjoyed the people side of healthcare. So I went back to school. So I ended up as a physical therapist. And that's how I entered healthcare long, long ago. So then that's where the Plinko game to compliance starts. So I spent some time practicing as a PT. I was actually a geriatric specialist, really enjoyed working with dementia patients and other geriatric patients. And then I took a role for a while in operations where I was kind of overseeing a big swath of PTs and OTs that were doing home care for our company. And then the next big step for me was really, I took a role as being the director of quality assurance for the home health company that I was working for. So I was really enjoying that. I did a bunch of professional development related things with our team and quality things. And then we got hit with a giant zone program integrity audit because we were primarily Medicare because we were all geriatric. And at the time, the attorneys we were working with said, you need a compliance officer. And I got voluntold to be the compliance officer. And I didn't even know what a compliance officer was at that time, but I actually fell in love with it. And I found that it was, people were expecting you to kind of be a drag. And so that if you could show up in a positive way and somehow connect compliance and quality with patient care, which is my passion, that you really could make a difference. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed being the unexpected compliance officer. And so I stuck with compliance and I transitioned into different areas of healthcare. And then eventually, actually WAD Capital found me because of my PT background, because they had acquired an outpatient PT company, and that's how we connected. And now I've been here for 5 years. So that's my Plinko game in a nutshell.
That's awesome. I love that path through quality, right? We'll have to do another, we'll do another special episode where you can tell me about your guide to Hong Kong. We can compare some notes. I love that path through quality. And I really love what you said there, Melanie. You were saying that people expected you to be a drag. So if you showed up and you said, hey, you know what you're trying to do is what I'm trying to do, right? You're coming at it this way and I'm trying to build, you know, a program and, you know, procedures and things like that to help ensure quality. You know, people say, oh, well, then we're on the same team and then you can get some good work done. So I love that approach. And I love how you found your way there. So thanks for sharing that with us. And I'm so glad that you landed right here on the Plinko board.
Oh, thanks.
So let's talk a little bit about WAD Capital Partners and your role there. I think it's super interesting. In case our listeners don't know, in a former life, I worked at a similar private equity firm, and we were investing in healthcare companies. And that's kind of how I found my way into compliance, is when, you know, I was sitting on the boards of healthcare companies and stuff like that, saw how important compliance was. And you and the team at WAD Capital Partners have a really interesting approach where you really double down on that. I mean, most private equity firms do not have a dedicated compliance officer for the actual companies to run good compliance and ethics programs. You know, if you see a compliance officer kind of on the website for a private equity firm, 99.9% of the time, they're doing regulatory compliance for finance, for their investors, for their limited partners and things like that. But WAD really has, as a firm, a dedication to compliance. So talk to me a little bit about maybe how that came about, or like what the source of that is, and then maybe we can kind of get into what that looks like for your role and your purview.
Sure. Yeah. So WAD does have a firm compliance officer who handles our SEC compliance and financial compliance. So shout out to Charles, because he's awesome.
Hey, Charles.
My role, when WAD started investing heavily in the healthcare space, they really saw the value of compliance, because really it just takes one really bad compliance mishap to devalue your investment, right? So, or even, you know, reputational damage or financial damage, you name it, it's just not good. If you're a good investor, you want to protect that investment from that happening. So when we met, you know, we had met really to talk more about their outpatient PT company, but the more we started talking and having dialogue, they had been, I guess, thinking for some time about putting someone in the role that I'm currently in to be a resource for all of their healthcare companies and to the firm. The more I talked to them, I thought, wow, what an interesting concept. That sounds like it could be a really interesting job, because it's kind of this combo of working for one company, WAD, but also being a consultant to all these other companies. And I love variety, and I love having, you know, I always thought, you know, if I had gone the medical school route instead of the PT school route, I always thought I would love being an emergency physician, because every day is a new day. It's just, you never know what's coming. And I feel like this job has just been great, because I'm learning, as much as I'm helping, I'm also learning 5 years worth of experience every year, because I'm working with all these different fields in healthcare and different teams. And it's just a really exciting place to be for me. But that was their concept, was that let's protect our investments. Let's give, you know, a lot of times the companies we partner with are a size when we first start working with them where they have, you know, a lot of really good compliance in place. But it's time to step up the game and really, you know, get a really robust seven elements program going. And so it's a great time for them to have a strategic advisor. And then I can help them build their internal team too, because I'm sure, you know, because you talk to a lot of people and, you know, it's not always easy to find exactly the right compliance fit for your company. Right. So I can help them on that front as well. And then what's really cool is that I've networked all of our teams now. So we have a weekly forum meeting where all the compliance teams get on a Zoom every Friday afternoon and we can best practice share. We can throw questions out to the group. We have speakers come in to talk about hot topics. We do an annual symposium every year now where we all come to Chicago and I bring a bunch of speakers in to do continuing ed specifically designed for our compliance teams. And it's really just become this great community of compliance people, which has been super fun. So, so that's kind of in a nutshell what we're doing. And I think it's pretty unique. I've been asked after speaking engagements a bunch of times if I'm aware of anyone else doing it. And at least thus far, I'm not aware of any other PE groups that are doing just what we're doing. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think some people might, you know, kind of pitch it to a, you know, an acquisition, you know, target and say, hey, you know, we have this person who knows compliance, but it's usually someone who's just on a retainer or a consultant that they can bring in. I think it really speaks to Wad Capital Partners, you know, dedication to getting ethics and compliance right. You know, like I was saying, you know, I saw that before I even came in to a compliance company, a compliance role, how much that feeds this cycle of good quality, you know, the business grows well, you can get the right people on the team, you can get the right ethics program in place, and that serves all the stakeholders really well. So, yeah, I think it is pretty unique. And it sounds like there's plenty of variety there. I love that you do this symposium and you have this little mastermind group of all the leaders across these teams. I bet that's really really dynamic way to get everybody, you know, sharpening each other.
Well, it's interesting because when before this role, when I was working, I live in Philadelphia, but I was living in New Jersey at the time, and I belong to the Healthcare Finance Management Association, has a CARE forum. It's a compliance and ethics forum. And I found them at, I think it was an HCCA conference when I had just been voluntold to be the compliance officer, and I was kind of adrift and figuring out what I was doing. And they had a session at HCCA for this compliance forum group from New Jersey. And so this was in Vegas. So okay. I showed up and interestingly, it connects to the Plinko story too, because I remember one of their speakers was talking about how she had been in, I think, hotel hospitality before she ended up somehow in healthcare compliance. And it was this light bulb moment where I thought, okay, I'm going to be all right. I can do this. But that forum was so meaningful to me because I needed phone a friends. I needed experts who were willing to spend their time with me and answer my questions and help me learn the ropes. And so that was kind of my model for what I'm doing with our little mini forum, is that I found it so valuable and I wanted to do that for someone else.
Yeah, it's one thing that I really love about this compliance and ethics community is there's not the kind of competitiveness or the potential infighting that you might see, I don't know, between two people at, you know, in the marketing division at competing firms or something. You know, we're all kind of trying to fight against misbehavior and against unethical practices. And so many people just around the compliance and ethics community are willing to share what they know or help someone get along in their career. And I think it's so cool that you've fostered that type of attitude among your own team in the portfolio there at Wad. It's really cool.
I think that's how I first encountered Nick too, is that he was participating in the compliance career connection.
Yeah.
And so was I. And so we encountered each other on those Zoom calls. And I remember thinking, wow, this guy's great. And I started following you guys more on LinkedIn, and your content was so good. And then we, you know, we all saw each other this year at the SCCE conference, and it's this great community where I think everyone is so willing to share and help each other out that I think it is unique to our field in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I don't think you see it a lot in, you know, manufacturing or IT or marketing or some of these other divisions, you know, corporate divisions. So, I just feel thankful and lucky to be a part of it. I think it's a really special thing that we have here in the ethics game. So I'd like to talk a little bit about, I think that when you talked about how when WAD gets involved with a portfolio company and, you know, maybe they join the portfolio or you start working with them, you know, generally probably to, you know, meet the investment criteria, they probably have a lot of good things going for them already. They already have a strong program. But also, you know, you as a firm and you specifically, Melanie, kind of, I imagine, start implementing this vision of, okay, well, let's build this for where it needs to be in 5 years from now. And I think that that's a little bit unique in like the vision that you're able to build alignment around implementing, because at least, you know, kind of the common story that I hear is everyone's fighting for budget when they go to corporate, and they, you know, they need their team to be 40% bigger, but people say, hey, you know what, here's a 3% increase in your budget, kind of make do with that. So talk to me a little bit, like, obviously everyone has to, you know, kind of make the case for their budget and, you know, track ROI and things like that. But talk to me a little bit about how, you know, when you get involved with a company or when you're kind of building for that future, how you work with those teams to build a vision for, hey, let's see what this is going to look like when the company is, you know, 50% bigger or something like that.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, that's a really great question for us because, you know, of course, most of these companies will then be in acquisition mode. So they will be growing quickly. So, I mean, I think the first step is I do get involved at the due diligence level. So whether it's a platform acquisition for WAD or it's an add-on acquisition for one of our companies, compliance really has a seat at the table early on, which I think is really important. So we know exactly where we're going to be starting and, you know, if there's needs for immediately post-close things that we need to get started on, you know, we start with a good awareness. And that's great because I can say even ahead of time, this is my gap analysis or my risk analysis. And I think, you know, I'm going to highly recommend that you do these three or four things first and soon. And I can put budget numbers with those too, because, you know, once you've been doing this for a while, you're like, you know, so it's going to cost you, you know, X to get a good LMS system in place, because I think you need to upgrade your learning management system, or, you know, I think it's time for a security risk assessment. And that's probably ballpark depending on if you're going to do, you know, penetration testing or whatever. I think it's going to cost this much, and, or you need to hire two new people. I think, you know, you're going to need somebody qualified to be your privacy officer or whatever. You know, I try to put together my best guess at, you know, first 6 months to 1 year big expenses, so there's no surprises right off the bat. I like to be very direct about that. And then, I really think that one of the best things about the way we have this set up and the way WAD has prioritized this is that it really, just the fact that I'm around kind of sets expectations. And I think ask my teams at some point, because I do think they probably get a little less pushback on spend because they have this external backup in me saying, yeah, this is necessary. This is, you know, this is best practices. And I do think that helps. And I think it's proven itself over the last, I've been with WAD 5 years now, and it proves itself that, you know, you're probably saving money and you're saving a lot of headaches down the road to do these things up front. And I think the more we establish that, the easier these conversations get, you know?
Yeah, I think it's cool that you're kind of a built-in sanity check for some of these things that a company might want to do, because I imagine those things that you bring up, not to take anything away from you, Melanie, but the people sitting in the seat are like, yeah, I'd love a better LMS and it'd be great to have a privacy officer. And, you know, like, you know, I tend to think that a lot of us in compliance, we have a list as long as our arm of all the things that we'd love to do if we, you know, had 3 times the budget. So I imagine mm-hmm. as you come in, they say, okay, well, that'd be awesome. If you can help me get that, that's great. And you're kind of that built-in sanity check. But there's also something that you're doing there that I think that a lot of people in our audience can benefit from by, you know, just doubling down on. And the way that you're talking about signaling that early and saying, hey, you know what, I'm going to make a recommendation early, or I'm going to make a recommendation later. And it's going to include some things like this. So just kind of sit on this for now. I'll come back later. But we're probably looking at something kind of in this range for these different things. I think there's something strategic about that, that, you know, whether you did it strategically or it's just kind of naturally expressed over time as you've done this, where if you're going to someone senior, right, you're going to the execs, you know, or you're going to the board, or you're going to your own chief compliance officer, if you're on a team of, you know, 100 compliance people, kind of seeding that idea up front and saying, hey, I'm going to make a recommendation later. Here's what I'm seeing. You know, we're probably heading in this direction. Gives them a chance to digest that a little bit and set their expectations. Also gives you a chance to maybe hear some of the potential pushback or the question someone has of like, wow, that's surprising. I didn't think we'd need a formal, you know, privacy officer until we were twice as big. And then you can figure out, okay, well, when I come back for my formal proposal, then I know I'm going to get a little pushback around this. I need to give them mm-hmm. some more detail around this. Maybe I should have a plan B because they feel like, you know, hiring this person full-time at this is going to be really expensive. And I think that's something great that our audience can take away, just how, you know, when we're making these proposals up to kind of the higher level to the board, and we're trying to advocate for our own compliance team, seeding those things, you know, signaling early where it's going and giving people a chance to kind of give you some early, you know, concerns or questions or pushback can allow you to make that progress faster. So you're not just kind of making one proposal in the fourth quarter and then you got to wait until next year if it doesn't go right.
Yeah. And I think if you can tie it together, I think it's Mary Shirley that always says when she's talking to her board, she always talks about what, so what now, or what next, right? And so, you know, I think sometimes executives and boards are used to compliance leaders talking a lot about activities, you know, compliance is doing this activity or that activity. And so I try to refocus on making the connection in a way that firmly ties it into strategic goals for the business so that, you know, what are the top, you know, I like to go in and say, these are what I see as the top three risks to the business that could be potentially costly, right? So, you know, maybe one is always going to be cybersecurity, right? Because then everyone understands that because you hear it in the news all the time, people getting, you know, breached or whatever. So, you know, you can easily come up with some good real life ripped from the headlines examples of the numbers involved with if you have a giant breach. And certainly, you know, spending say $50,000 for a security risk assessment doesn't sound so bad if you're looking at someone paying over $1 million for a breach, right?
Right.
And then you look at, you know, maybe another top risk factor is going to be, you know, billing irregularities. Like if you get caught up in a false claims issue, you know, you can easily find real life examples of what that has cost people, or even sanction excluded list checks, right? You can easily go on the, you know, the internet and find examples of people who've had to self-report and pay significant amounts of money because they ended up having someone excluded working for them. But I like to make it a very linear discussion. This is the risk. This is the likelihood impact scale of that risk. And this is the spend associated with mitigating or controlling that risk so that you're making a very business-like, results-oriented conversation. So no one ever has to say, well, so what? You know, because you're making it really clear why you need the spend.
Yeah. And I love that point about tying it to call it, you know, I think you said the top three risk areas, right? Because, you know, ultimately, I think that when you're speaking to, you know, this board level, just to use a shorthand, you need to kind of boil it down, right? Because they're going into another session after that about operations. They're going into another session after that about growth strategy or whatever it is. And if you can bring them back to, hey guys, we're always talking about these three big risks, right? quality, exclusion screening, and cyber. Like, so, you know, let's talk about number two and here's what we have to do for that. Then they don't have to like go back to school and learn all the regulations about this very specific thing for, you know, the Southeastern region and, you know, what the regulators are doing there. You can tie them back to that and give them kind of a point of orientation. And ultimately, you know, I think that what you're talking about, Melanie, is a lot of ways it's around, you know, it's kind of similar to the thing you were talking about early on when you said you came from quality into compliance. You're finding that alignment that you have naturally with the other party, right? The people you're talking to at the board level, they care about this stuff, right? Like, they don't know all about these activities and what it takes to manage an LMS and all of that stuff. They don't really need to get down into those weeds, but we all want the going concern to continue. We want the company to grow. We want to have a good reputation for quality care to patients and things like that. Well, if we can get back to those things, okay, well, we all agree about that. Here's something that I know a lot about that supports this thing that you and I both care about. And I think you, you know, talked about using that when you went from quality to compliance, and you use that same thing. Let's anchor to this alignment that we all have when you're talking to the board or advocating for, you know, a new vision for the compliance program.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I mean, I think, trying to think, I was at your session at SCCE this year too. And
yeah, we were talking about going to the board, some of the similar stuff.
Yeah. Yep. And I think, you know, what you guys were saying was very similar along these same lines, you know, about how do you make sure your communication is effective. And, you know, I think you can't spend enough time strategizing about that.
Yeah. I think it can be hard for us as ethics experts when we spend so much of our days and weeks running the program and making sure that everything's done and chasing people down to kind of, you know, finish filling out your conflict of interest form and, you know, making sure people took their course or should we revamp this policy? Like we're very tactical, right? That's what people rely on us for because we get the job done. And I love that about so many great things that I love about people in our space. And that's one of them. But we spend so much time kind of in those tactics that, you know, you said it great, Melanie, you can't spend enough time figuring out how to strategize because you might have one 15 minute or hour and a half meeting a year where you really set the stage for the money that you're going to ask for in the budget 6 months later, or that's going to get approved after the next round of your program. And strategically thinking about, okay, who am I talking to? What do I need to bring up? How should I talk about this in a way that they get interested or concerned or like stay engaged or whatever it is? It's really so important. I think it's a lot of it. It's a lot of what allows high performing compliance programs to kind of reach that next level and say, okay, well, we're ready for the next wave of things that come, or we're ready for this next regulation because, you know, we're not on our heels. We're kind of running forward on stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. And I think it's super helpful to have the compliance leaders not forget that they're business leaders too, you know, and really think, you know, we all need to think in terms of the business. And you know, like I had Ellen Hunt did a session with my forum last year and this year as well. But she, you know, one of the things she's big on is making sure that you understand the strategic goals of the other leaders in your business so that you can be helpful to them, so that they can be helpful to you, so that they know that you support your shared goals. And I think it's really important to remember that, you know?
Yeah, I love that. That's so important. I mean, this is something that we go over at Compliance Line on, you know, what we call our day zero, our like initial orientation, is that, you know, even the most empathetic, charitable person, they have, you know, some or a ton of self-interest, right? That person who goes and volunteers at the soup kitchen, they feel good doing that. And they definitely care about those people, but there's something that their heart kind of resonates with that. And, you know, that goes all the way through your business of somebody, you know, whatever, in marketing or in quality or in recruiting or whatever, they have their own goals. And if you understand what those strategic priorities are, I mean, what's great about us in compliance is our, you know, us doing our job is aligned with pretty much everyone across the whole company, right? Like, unless you're like a fraudster or a thief. Like, you know, doing ethics
hopefully
and compliance,
you don't have too many of those.
Yeah. Hopefully you're not pitching them on how, you know, you should get better monitoring in place. But I mean, you know, pretty much everything everyone's trying to do, we're trying to support that. Right. So we have that strong core alignment of we're all interested in similar outcomes. And, you know, I think that if you can tap into that and say, hey, you know what? I get what you're trying to do. You're trying to expand into this new region. I can help make sure that that goes smoothly and you don't have to backtrack 6 months. Or, hey, right. you're trying to, you know, get your quality up. Well, some of the stuff that we're doing, it's going to help quality go higher because everyone's going to be keyed in onto the right stuff. And I love that piece that you brought up that Alan Hunt says, of understanding those goals of the other leaders, can really help you get your job done.
Yeah. And I think that a compliance line, whenever I see you and Nick present as well, I think you also, you know, I can tell that you've also got that connection between strategic business and compliance, so that they're not, I think sometimes people try to keep them in different buckets when really they have to be married, you know? Yeah. And so I think it's always great. You know, you guys always have great philosophies around how to pull that together as well.
Thanks, Melanie. That's kind of you to say. I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that we're trying to, it's part of how we see the world. It's part of how we've seen these things work, in a business, you know, when someone's making a case to, like you said, do an acquisition or, you know, acquire an LMS, you know, they all have some similar tenets, and that strategic alignment kind of draws through all of them. I'd love to, see if, this is interesting to you. I want to talk about finance for a minute. So right. I know you're not, you know, I know you're not a financier. You're not a, you know, you don't work on the sales and trading desk, but what I've realized is a lot of, I don't know if it's, you know, kind of the sense that a lot of compliance is rated, kind of rooted in some, you know, kind of legal philosophies that are not very, you know, finance and arithmetically oriented or what. But I find that a lot of people in compliance kind of see finance as, you know, it's like a different language and they can't speak it, or they have a trouble. They, you know, kind of maybe feel challenged when trying to make an ROI case or something. But I think you might have some interesting perspective on it, because, you know, the people at Wad Capital are primarily finance people making, you know, financial investments, and you're bridging that into, you know, you're spending time at a portfolio company, working on their program, helping them advocate for that to, you know, the people on their board or on the investment committee or something like that. What, you know, if any perspective do you have on ways that you maybe understand how to speak that finance and ROI language that maybe some other people don't get until they, you know, get some more experience in those conversations?
Well, it's interesting because even I'm trying to improve on that, because I think I have a few go-tos which I can share, but I also feel like I am working on trying to do a better job at coming up with really objective measurements that yep. tie good compliance to financial outcomes.
Okay.
So, for instance, you know, so one analogy I always use is that, you know, you wouldn't find, say, an Olympic athlete, right, who was an Olympic gold medal winner, but their diet was junk, right? Or okay. their, like, basically, if you're disciplined in one place, you're probably disciplined. You know, if you're okay. really successful, you're probably disciplined across the board. Right?
Yeah, they probably don't just get 2 hours of sleep a night and then go out and train
right.
10 hours the next
and,
day.
You know, go smoke a half a pack of cigarettes and go to McDonald's and stay up all night, right?
Right.
So, you know, I think I really do believe that when you see high performers in quality, high performers in compliance, you're probably mm-hmm. also seeing high performers in other business areas, operationally organized right. and financially controlled. And so I would like to start connecting the dots between how do you do, for instance, on your compliance program effectiveness review, and how did you do on your financial plan for that year? You know, I right. would love to have, you know, that's my dream, is to really have concrete numbers there. But I do find that even just talking about, you know, the Olympic athlete example, or I always talk about the Black Swan event example too. Yep. So, you know, I think there's a book called The Black Swan. It was a bestseller. I don't know, it's older now, but you can still find it. And one of the examples in there is, let's just say before 9/11 happened, right? You had some engineer who invented this really impenetrable cockpit door, you know, that said, I think we need to improve security. We need to install this really safe, no access door on all planes. And this was, you know, the year before 9/11 happened.
Yeah.
You could just imagine everybody would be like, oh my gosh, you know, it's going to cost a fortune to re-outfit all our planes, and right. it's going to take time, and it's going to bother, you know, it's going to decrease productivity while we do that. And what a hassle. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's been, it's always, the cockpit door has always been this way, and it's been fine. Right. So
yeah, we've been flying for 40 years and that we haven't had any problems. So
right, no problems,
it's
right?
basically forever.
And so if they went ahead and did that, you'd have all of that, you know, annoyance and griping and everything else, but then 9/11 never happened, right? Mm-hmm. But no one knows that 9/11 would have happened, right?
Right?
And that's the conundrum of compliance, right? Because yes. if we're really doing our job well, the money we're saving you, the grief we're saving you never comes to be. So it's yes. really tough being in compliance because you're really trying to convince people to do the right thing so they don't get the pain instead of waiting for the pain to do the right thing.
Yes.
You know, so.
Yeah,
so
or waiting until the regulator knows that the pain happened enough somewhere else that they force it on you.
Right, right. Yeah. So the more you can use real life examples of where things have gone wrong elsewhere to demonstrate the value of what you're doing, you know, sometimes you have to rely on that. I don't want it to be a scare tactic, more just information providing, you know, yeah. that this is, you know, that's another value of networking, because if you are networking with all your fellow compliance colleagues in your industry, you can say, we're seeing audits happening of this and that, you know, I'm talking to others in the industry and this is where the payers are focusing, or this is where the government is focusing. And so we really need to control, put our controls in place in that area because that's going on in the world. So I don't know if that answered your question, but that's
great.
Of how I approach it. Yeah.
Well, it's great because, you know, I love the answer, Melanie, because it's not you saying, oh, well, you need to go read a, you know, finance 401 book and you need to learn about options trading and, you know, the Black-Scholes model for, you know, pricing or something. To have these finance conversations, you just need to have a business conversation and make sure that, you know, someone can draw the lines from the program and the tactics that you want to do through, you know, some, you know, dollar figure into what they care about. And the things that you're bringing up, you know, like you don't need a finance degree to talk about this stuff. And I know you said that it shouldn't be a scare tactic, but like it does need to be an education. And a lot of times you need some examples, right? You like humans learn through story. And if we live this every day, right? And I'm getting my news feed of all the enforcements that are happening in my industry. And I'm seeing all the fines from, you know, the $2,000 fine up to the $2 million fine. I see all that stuff all the time. Well, I need to be able to have a conversation with somebody and within 5 minutes, let them know, hey, you know what, this stuff is happening all the time and we don't want to be on that list. Or, you know, these excluded individuals, they creep up for all these different reasons. So we need a tight system here, or we're going to get, you know, these fines or these risks or whatever. So you need some way to communicate it. And, you know, sometimes that black swan type of thing is really helpful, right? Because, you know, if I have it right, a black swan is not just a rare event, but it's a rare event that is kind of so rare that you might ignore it. But if you get hit with it, it's going to really wreck you, right? So it's not like, oh, it's a one in a million chance. You know, it's a one in a million chance. You know, it's like the 1,000-year flood or whatever, right? That's going to like wipe everything out. So, you know, when you can have conversations around some of those things, well, that's different from the kind of range of risk that an operations manager sees, right? They see, okay, well, you know what? Probably 1 out of 100 people kind of forget to put the cap on this thing. And then we just got to catch that. No, we're dealing with, you know, 1 in 1,000, 1 in 1,000,000 type things. And you can drive that conversation around it and then say, okay, well, you guys get this concept. Well, here's why we need to spend an extra $80,000 on this year. And you know what? $80,000 in the scope of a $2.6 million fine. Here's an example. You know, that's not that much if it can, you know, make that, you know, so much less likely to happen. But, you know, I think that having that dynamism in that conversation, to your point, kind of getting ready and spending enough time to strategically think about how you're going to bring that stuff up can help you have that kind of money conversation about our ROI. You don't need like, you know, a spreadsheet with 800 cells in it to explain to somebody that, hey, you know what, we need to upgrade our LMS, or, you know, we're going to need someone here. They're not going to go through all of that. You just need to frame out a conversation that someone says, okay, well, you know what, we're investing all the time. And, it, you know, I think this is something else that you might have perspective on, Melanie. I mean, people at the leadership level of a company, they're always making investments, right? It's like, are we going to do an acquisition or upgrade the compliance program or spend more on marketing or do retraining of our people? We're going to do three of these things this year. And you just have to be one of those things that, where they say, okay, well, we're making investments all the time to improve our reputation, improve our quality, improve our revenue or our size or whatever it is. And you just need to kind of get in the mix there.
Yeah. And I think you can also make arguments about the impact of ethical culture on your dynamics of your organization and how, you know, especially with, I feel so old saying this, but with the younger generation, they really do want to work somewhere they feel good about, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, we have a big impact on the culture of an organization and, you know, the sense of organizational justice and, you know, just we can create a place where people want to stay. We can be a big part of that as well. Yeah. So, I mean, it might be a little intangible, but I think it's true. So,
yeah, it is a little intangible, but also it's like provable. There's a bunch of data around it and it can be in the mix of things that you talk about, right? Like if you say, hey, we're not going to reduce any risk, but, you know, give me an extra 200 grand for my compliance program because people are going to want to work here. Well, that's probably not going to fly on its own, but you can say, we're going to reduce risk. We're going to improve quality. We're going to, you know, save some time on our compliance team and it's going to be a better place to work that people are more proud of. Then you can kind of put the full picture together.
Exactly.
So we're getting toward the end here, Melanie. And I wanted to talk a little bit about your team. And, you know, I find it interesting that a lot of people in compliance, they always work in this matrix, right? We need the operations team to get in on it. We maybe need the communications team to help us get this done. We need the board on board with us and all of that. And I think you work in an interesting matrix where you have, you know, you have your oversight, you're kind of the strategic partner. You have people at WAD that you're working with. You have people at individual portfolio companies. Talk to me a little bit about how work gets done from your desk and kind of how you work with or support or help augment the teams that you're working with.
Sure. So early on, I spend a lot of boots on the ground time with a new portfolio company. I like to really be in their space and get to know them and their personality, their organizational personality, so that especially as I'm helping them build a team, I want to make sure that I'm finding people that are a good cultural fit for their executive team and their organization. You know, it really varies from company to company what kind of team they already have in place when I start working with them, or if we're really, you know, starting and building from the ground up. But, you know, usually it involves taking all of the due diligence so that you kind of know where there's areas of opportunity and where the strengths are and helping them build that first compliance work plan. And then helping them staff internally to do that. And then, you know, as our relationship and their organization builds, you know, I become less operational and more strategic as time goes on. So, you know, usually there's this initial flurry of activity where I'm really in the trenches, really helping them build on a day-to-day basis their work plan and doing meetings and town halls and all kinds of stuff to get the compliance program going. And then, you know, further down the line, I have some great compliance teams in our company. And then it, you know, might be a weekly what's up call, you know, where we check in and if there's anything I can do or, you know, anything I can help with. And we have our weekly forum calls where, you know, we try to do hot topics, whether it's, you know, information blocking, or maybe now it's, you know, price transparency and no surprise billing, or, you know, for a while it was all COVID all the time. So it was, you know, how do you handle the vaccination mandates? Or, you know, we try to have weekly calls that if everyone needs that information, it's a great time for everyone to be together and get that. And then, you know, there's usually, I try to be that extra set of eyes on board prep, you know, so just like we were talking about, you know, what do you really want to say? How do you want to use your time in front of the board? I'll do cool. reviews of content for that kind of thing. Or just be that phone a friend if there's, you know, a question or an incident happens and someone needs support. So it really varies kind of what I do, but that's the basic gist of it.
Cool. Yeah, that's really interesting how it kind of transforms from when you're getting introduced to kind of, you know, I imagine after you're 3 or 4 years into, you know, a plan and you've maybe, you know, helped build that team out, then you can kind of just be that strategic support and maybe help connect them with some other people in the portfolio who have been through it or something like that.
Yeah. And kind of also just, I could be helpful with, you know, I know you need cyber insurance, or you need a security risk assessment done, or you need, you need a privacy expert to come in and review your HIPAA policies. I mean, the longer you're in this field, you kind of know who you would recommend. And, if I can get several companies to work with someone, then we can usually get better pricing. And so I try to be, and then you can always say, oh, and not only do we need the money for that, but we're getting you a good deal on it, which also helps too.
That always helps. And we got a 20% discount. So, just let's sign up for it now.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. That's really interesting. I love how you're able to help in so many different ways. And, I think it's so cool that you get to, see beneath the hood and, help other ethics experts across the WAD portfolio do their job better and help kind of move that forward. I think it's probably a really cool thing for a compliance leader at one of these companies to become part of the WAD portfolio, and then find that they have someone on their team, they have someone who has their back, who can help advocate for them and help them achieve the things that, like a lot of us know, hey, you know what, this program could be a lot better if we had a little bit more support or buy-in or budget or whatever it is. It's cool that you're able to be that catalyst for change across all these different companies.
I mean, it's been great. It's really interesting, and I'm gradually building my own team. So I think you probably met Leslie Bowles at SCCE. So she joined my
team. She seems great. What a catch, huh? Great job finding her.
Yeah, she's amazing. And I am not, she is by far the expert on coding and billing and kind of revenue cycle related compliance. And I mean, if anything I've learned in my career, it's find people smarter than you to help you, because they'll, it'll always help you in the end. So, I think we just added Haley Marsh, I think about 3 months ago, who's another coding audit specialist, which is just super helpful, because sometimes our companies, their revenue cycle teams can get coached up on how to do internal audit. So I have resources to help with that now. I think next I might add a more privacy expert, more of a privacy expert to my team might be the next step, just so that, maybe a security expert, so that eventually we'll really be able to give fine-tuned assistance in any area, So
that's awesome.
Goals.
Exactly. Hashtag goals. I love your vision for that. Yeah, it's really cool. You could kind of have like the special ops team up at the main ship. Getting all the special stuff that people need. I love that vision that you have. All right. So Melanie, as we wrap up, is there any final words you want to leave us with? Anything you want to tell us about WAD Capital Partners or stuff you're working on? And if not, you can just tell us something that you're excited about for this year.
Well, it's interesting because I've been spending a lot of time in the last 2 weeks thinking about how to prevent burnout. So Ellen and I are actually speaking on how to prevent compliance officer burnout at the HCCA conference this spring. And so I've been thinking about, this is the year, if any year, people are going to burn out because this pandemic thing, it's got to go, right?
We had enough.
So it's enough. So what I'm excited about is balance and helping other people find balance in this crazy time. So I'm a big fan of meditating. So if you can get your meditation game in order this year as a compliance officer, I think it will do worlds of good. I think what I'm excited about is finding different ways to make this a positive environment in the times we're living in. So just trying to stay creative and network with people like yourself, because I think a big part of avoiding career and job burnout is having a village so that you have other people to talk to and that are in your same boat, And so I think things like this is it, reach out, make these connections, talk to Giovanni and Nicholas and, make sure that you're finding people who get you jazzed about your field again. So that's my theme for 2022 is avoid the burn.
Awesome. I love it. I'm so glad you guys are speaking on that. That's a great point that, we've been kind of white knuckling it for a while, right? It's like going on 2 years, and you know, at some point you got to make sure that you're taking care of yourself and do some of that self-care and, you know, make sure that you don't get burnout. I love that. I love that encouragement and that focus on that. I'll be sure to catch your Urine and Ellen session at HCCA. And I love that encouragement to our audience. So, you know, you heard it here from Melanie Schwanholz, guys. You got to take care of yourself.
I'll be part of your tribe, too.
Okay, yeah. Reach out to Melanie. You know, network with your team. Listen, a lot of the things that we do in compliance and ethics, it can feel like we're an island, even if we don't want to be. It can feel like we're alone and, you know, we're kind of carrying this banner forward. But there are people all around this industry, in your same sector, in completely different companies who are doing a lot of the same things, who are trying to, you know, run their team and manage policies and make sure everyone's taken care of. So you're not alone. It, you know, it obviously is hard work. That's why they rely on such great, thoughtful, caring people like you, all of our listeners out there. That's why everyone's relying on you, because you're so good and you can handle it, but you can't handle it alone. So don't do it alone. Right. Fight against the burnout. Make sure you take care of yourself. Reach out to your community. Build a tribe if you don't have one. And we'll all get through this together.
Exactly. Couldn't have said it better.
All right. Well, let's do it. This has been the Ethics Experts. I'm your host, Giovanni Gallo. This episode is brought to you by Compliance Line. And it has been my honor and pleasure to host Melanie Schwanholz today from Wad Capital Partners. Melanie, thanks for joining us. Thanks for contributing your great ideas and your genius and helping ethics experts around the world become a better version of themselves.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was really a lot of fun.